apple mayor. My first prison term was the result of ignorance. All my life was planned out. In college, I was pre-law. I was supposed to be on the opposite side of these bars.
My training part was focused on...
I was always drawn to arguments.
Because my mom was stressing me out about what...
Keeping people out of jail.
One day, I was walking up 8th Avenue, back to the trail, thinking about coming to get some money in my pocket. And I had a scar for us, but she was driving me along. I left out because my man, Charlie Tom, he turned down to lose the money.
I spoke up, and I thought I got my point.
What you doing?
She told me to come over. My was waiting for me with his gun, and he threw up the shit out of me. My mom was screaming, shoot me already. Just stop hitting me with the gun. Finally, he stopped and sent me on my way. I jumped on the train to my mother's house, hoping she would take me in. I had no idea how to survive.
The car he was driving was a Datsun.
Dumb as a rock. My eye began to swell on the train. It looked like I was having an allergic reaction to shellfish. Balloon face. Man, I was hurting. But my ego was destroyed. All I could think about was the damn gun coming at me. Train ride was shook because my Then it started getting dark, so I tried to go home. Mom said I wasn't walking, so I turned around and left. She had already taken in my two cousins, Erica and Raymond. I felt left out, so I was like, for 3 days I managed to hold my own. Until one day I was on Prospect Avenue talking to some girls, and I just met when this guy comes up talking shit. Get off my spot, he shouted at me. Fuck you, it's a free world. The girls were in the house and I stood there. Finally, he left. All 3 girls sucked their heads out the window and we caught somewhere. Then all of a sudden, they slammed the window shut. I turned around and this motherfucker is running up on me with a gun shooting right at me. He got right up on me before he pulled the trigger. I thought I was dead. I just closed my eyes and prayed when I heard him quit.
I had no man, just a number.
About a friend,
1-9-4-9-4-7. They came to question I was looking for.
He asked me to work for
all personal items.
He said that they like my style.
Placed in a box.
And he trusted me.
There, I made.
I'm listening to every word that's coming out of his mouth. But the main thing that got me in the door was him saying I was going to teach you everything I knew. I was sold from that point on. That's how he recruited me into the game. It was all about Harlem.
I was running away. My head was bleeding. I had been grazed. I heard the sirens. So I left the scene and started walking to my house. I was shook up. But really? That's an understatement. I was crying hard when I knocked on my door. The artist opened it, took one look at me, and slammed it in my face. Bam! That hurt me more than getting shot and almost losing my life. I turned around not knowing what to do. The hallway smelled like piss, and I said to myself, damn, I have to get out of the projects. At the front of the building, there were people sitting on a bench drinking, smoking, but I was in survival mode. A few of my friends let me stay at the house, but for some reason when I left, some of the digs left for me. I didn't know how to get any real money to support myself, so I found myself stealing from people who gave me their trust, friendships, and time. After burning these bridges, I found myself homeless and on the streets 7 whole months, sleeping in parks, buildings, trains, and wearing the same clothes for weeks at a time. On the S train, I would ride from stop to stop, walking up, waking up to the demonic screams of iron against iron, wheels against steel. I felt so helpless over my life And the person I was turned
into. We don't always understand that which we do.
I became an outcast in my family.
So I have to come from disorder to order. From the seen to the unseen. Fate. Sure, I've been to prison. I've seen its structure, influence, maturity, and religion. I've seen a world within all worlds. Yet to be with a man in any world is to know you are strong, you are weak, you're caring, you're sharing. These things in all, that's our true dominion. That's how I became an alpha male.
Okay, so those were the voices of Dean Turner, Greg Carter, and Terrence Scruggs, who participated in a writing workshop at the Richmond City Jail from 2006 to 2008 with David Coogan, who I had the opportunity to work with and transcribe stories that they were writing in the jail from their handwritten documents to Word files. So I spent probably 6 to 8 months working on those and sort of getting to know some of these individuals through their writing over time. And David actually did some recordings, which is what you just listened to, of some of their writings last year, and he also conducted some interviews with them that I will share with you in a little bit. But I wanted to tell you a little bit about the Richmond City Jail and some of the ridiculous conditions that are found there. And later on we're going to talk with Ronald Fountain, who is from Baltimore and spent some time at the Richmond City Jail working with David, and is now back in Baltimore, and we'll talk to him in a little bit. So when you're walking into the Richmond City Jail, they have a three-story tier with cages that are supposed to hold 150 individuals, but they usually hold 150, but it was built for 50, so it's incredibly overcrowded. But so imagine you're walking in, and there's an open corridor that holds a staircase that is open to 16-foot-high floor-to-ceiling bars that are all open to each floor. So you can hear the guys on the first floor, the second floor, and the third floor. And if you're walking through and you're not from there, even if you are, walking up the stairs through the corridor, you can find the bars lined with shirtless men hanging too high off of the bars, so like on top of each other, hooting and hollering. And it's this really, it's sort of hard to see signs of civility in those moments. But this is just a result of some of the completely inhumane and somehow legal conditions at the Richmond City Jail in Virginia. So the facility was built in 1960 and has 862 beds, but routinely holds 1,400 to 1,600 people. So on any given night, there's dozens of people sleeping on the floor in one huge room together. Like I said, so imagine being in a room like twice the size, maybe three times the size, with 150 men who have done all kinds of different things, and maybe you forgot to pay your ticket. So here's a little quote from the Richmond Times Dispatch from 2006 with a quote from the sheriff's deputy, Anthony Washington. So in Richmond's aging, overcrowded jail, deputies try to keep a lid on cages, where they can't venture inside on their own, even with their cans of mace. As many as 150 men share these showers, toilets, and a sink. And then this is the quote from the sheriff. The inmates basically govern themselves, Washington says. All he can do is take each evening as it comes and keep its distance. So the deputies that walk the halls, there's three of them for 1,500 individuals. So they can't go in the cages because there's 150 guys like that could very easily overtake them. So it's a sort of complicated situation. So here's another pretty crucial issue that goes on in this space, despite the noise pollution and overcrowding. There's no air conditioning. And Richmond's a pretty hot place. Most summer days are in the upper 90s and humidity's pretty high, so it feels like it's definitely in the hundreds most days. No. That's why I live in New Mexico now. So there's no air conditioning, and it's pretty interesting how they used to deal with this. I read this press release that I'll read little bits of for you. From just last year, July 2008. Ice machines eliminate bulk ice purchases. Larger fans help reduce tier temperatures. So this is like they had to make a press release for this information, which is so outrageous to me. Okay, Richmond, Virginia. Sheriff C.T. Woody Jr. today announced for the first time, for the first summer session, the jail is leasing two ice makers to provide inmates ice, which they may take back with them to their air-conditioned housing tiers. Formerly, the jail purchased ice that was distributed to inmates three times daily, only on days topping over 90 degrees, at a cost of approximately $400 a day, or $1,200 for a week's supply. The new ice machines are leased at a cost of $340 a month and provide as much ice as necessary, which currently averages around 3,500 pounds per day. The heat conditions at the Richmond City Jail are well documented and we have planned ahead for heat spells we knew would come. Even on days that do not top over 90 degrees, the heat on the tiers can be enough to render someone lightheaded if they are not accustomed to the suffocating temperatures. With the ice machines and the new fans, our goal was to save money while making summer conditions a bit more bearable and keep heated-related medical incidents and temperature flares up to a minimum. Recently, the jail replaced its old 32-inch pedestal-style fans with 42-inch mobile fans. These fans are topple-resistant and are constructed to evenly dispense air throughout the tier with a multi-layered cooling approach by ventilating the air internally and augmenting the window-installed ventilation fans that pull hot air out of the tiers. So, again, you're in this room with 150 men. It's already really hot in this room, and there's like 10 of us. So imagine a bunch of smelly guys without any air conditioning, and they're talking about how they got 42-inch fans. Let's see. I gotta go back to where I was at. So let's hear from one of the interviews where I believe Dean Turner. This is Dean Turner talking about the conditions regarding the heat and other things in the prison, kind of making more real what I was sort of describing from my minimum experience there.
Right. When I was incarcerated, that's 100-something guys on that tier.
It's hot.
You know, Dave was cool. I like Dave. Dave was funny.
Tell me about life on the tier. What was it like in
life on the 10.
Yeah.
In the Richmond City Jail. Wow. Animals. Mm. The worst setting I ever been in my life. The living, how they made us live.
Right.
Like animals, like the scum of the earth. And right. Everybody's not like that. Yeah, you know, you can't judge me. You can't put me in the same category as a sex offender, because I'm not a sex offender. You can't put me in the same category as a murderer. I'm not a murderer. So you got everybody all in one. It's a mental pop. It's ready to come off.
Right.
Then living conditions is oh my God, horrendous. Living, you got some guys living, having to sleep on the floor by the urinals, by the shower. The shower has bugs in the shower. You know, it's so hot, you have to actually get in the sink and cut all the water on. Because it was so hot. That was like a pool to you. You can do that because people have to brush their teeth, face. So it was disgusting.
What category would you put yourself in then? You're not the sex offender, you're not the murderer.
I'm gonna keep it real. I was a drug dealer. Trying to survive. You know? And trying to better myself from becoming that animal. I would never be the murderer or the sex offender. The only time I would be the murderer if someone did anything to my family, my kids, then it's a different story. Then I have to defend my daughters. You know, I have no problem doing 25 life if somebody did something to my daughters.
So that was Dean Turner. And so you heard about the crazy heat conditions and the air quality really bad, and there's asbestos in the building. And the jail is notorious for wrongful medical deaths. And just this past December, a 54-year-old man named Earl John Glenier was serving a 6-month sentence for trespassing. Died due to lack of proper medical treatment of a pre-existing condition, which happens a lot. As I said, there's one guy walking around every hour, and you can't see, you know, 40 feet into a room full of 150 to 180 men. And then prisoners that are considered a threat to themselves are stripped naked and left in isolation cells without mattresses or toilets for fear that they might hang or drown themselves. And I've got some pictures here if you guys want to see. One quarter of the 1,500 inmates at any given time are diagnosed with mental illness, and they usually only get worse while being there. So let's hear from Greg Carter about some of his experiences at the Richmond City Jail.
I would say in prison, your survival mode is, there's no, all right. In prison, it's a little different because, you know, in prison, you know where you're going to sleep every night. Regardless, I don't care, you're going to be in the bed because in prison, they don't allow that. You're just going to be up. So you know where you're going to sleep every night. They give you 3 meals. You know what I'm saying? So to me, it's no such thing as survival mode. In jail, people just have a habit of bringing their bad habits in jail. And instead of using the time to correct bad habits, they take them same bad habits home with them because, you know, they utilize their time when we're worried about everything outside. They give you work for stipends. They, you know, all your everything, I mean, all you gotta do is do your time. There's no such thing as survival mode. They give you meals, you'll never starve. You always have somewhere to lay your head, you always have a shower, you always have clean clothes. They give you everything. They accommodate to you, you know what I'm saying, the best.
Okay, so like bugging off a fight or anything like that, that's not survival mode, that's just life.
Survival mode in the streets and survival mode in jail is a lot different because, like, you have a lot of people that go to jail and, you know, in the streets, they're nobody. And I swear, anybody that been to jail could just give me an amen or cosign. They're nobody. In the streets, they're nobody. But they go to jail and they get a little $150 on their books every week. Somebody taking care of them. They can live off that. You know what I'm saying? They come to jail and they big, man. It's no such thing as in jail. It's only in jail. It's only. You always have somewhere to lay your head. You always have a shower. You always have clean clothes. They give you everything. They accommodate to you. You know what I'm saying? The best.
Okay, so like bugging off a fight or anything like that, that's not survival mode, that's just life?
Survival mode in the streets and survival mode in jail is a lot different because, like, you have a lot of people that go to jail and, you know, in the streets, they're nobody. And I swear, anybody that been to jail could just give me an amen or cosign. They're nobody. In the streets, they're nobody. But they go to jail and they get a little $150 on their books every week. Somebody taking care of them. They can live off that. You know what I'm saying? They come to jail and they big, man. It's no such thing as in jail. It's only in jail. It's only.
Please say a command.
Confiscated our stuff and hindered our work. They are trying to terrify people, terrify us as activists and people working on this issue. It is obvious why they are doing this. It is because Israel is afraid of the expanding popular resistance.